Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
Thank you, Andy, for that introduction. And we want to start out by apologizing. Last week, it took us a long time to get to COVID good news. And so for those of you who called in and those of you who didn't, we're going to apologize. We're going to start with COVID good news right now. As medical and scientific communities have had more time and opportunity, they found better treatments, procedures, and medications that have drastically reduced the risk of COVID-19.
As more tests are being done, fewer people are testing positive. Roughly 9 to 10% decrease in positive tests across the country than a week ago.
That's pretty good. Let's see. Kane, Garfield, and Beaver counties, you are still COVID-free, according to the testing data. By now, you're probably feeling that is not news.
According to the Southwest Utah Public Health District website, the entire five counties since the beginning of this pandemic have a recovery rate of 99.93%, and that is based only on those that got a test and tested positive. The current understanding from the CDC, the World Health Organization, is that a large part of the population may have been infected and recovered but never got tested. With so many people being asymptomatic, meaning that they never had any symptoms, the recovery rate could be 3 or 4 times as high, meaning that the death rate from COVID could be about the same or possibly lower than the death rate from the flu.
So before we get mad at what we've been going through, keep in mind that this was an unknown at the time. Nobody had a crystal ball, and information that was available painted this as a very bad situation. So maybe there was some overreaction and some extreme measures, but we all made it through.
And here is one silver lining. With everyone well-trained in hand-washing, the use of sanitizer, social distancing, and wearing masks, and with businesses taking all the extra sanitary precautions, we are all well on the way to a historic low of influenza this fall, because these are exactly the same measures that would keep everyone safe from spreading the influenza virus.
So in the end, there are some positives that will come from all this activity that we've done. So today, we want to cover some new ground, you know, things we haven't discussed before, and we want to apologize that this may become an uncomfortable topic.
We're most uncomfortable when we are not well informed, right?
That's true. So as Southern Utah's elder care resource, we want to present this information in the best possible way.
There are conversations that you will have at some point, and we don't want anyone to be blindsided or unprepared. When it comes to elder care, these are real and common issues. So let's put them out there in the open. As you, the listener, are not required to think any one way, we are not trying to convince you or force you to make a decision. We are just introducing a topic and giving some good foundational knowledge so that when these topics come up again, you will need to make a decision, you'll be better informed, and can make the best decision for you.
So forewarned is forearmed, as they say. So let's discuss the provider's order for sustained treatment, also known as a pulsed. If you know what a pulsed is, give yourself a gold star, because you must have been in an emotional and scary situation to find out about what that was that first time. I'm going to throw you under the bus here, Andy.
Nope, never heard of it. I haven't. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm actually a little uncomfortable. I'm worried about what you guys are going to say.
Tough for you, too. So this is going to be uncomfortable for us, but we really think getting this information out so that people aren't blindsided is going to be really important here.
Well, let's point out. So whenever you sign up for home health or hospice, or you're in the hospital, whether you realize it or not, you have been asked questions about your care in a critical emergency.
Yeah, we're talking about resuscitation, life-sustaining events, things like that. And so these are your decisions that are put down in writing.
And why did we think that this was an important topic today? Because we have had a number of questions about it. And a little bit of panic when you bring the pulsed out and start to talk about it. People aren't sure that they're ready to make those decisions. And when you're talking about that conversation at that time, it can sometimes come across almost like you're either talking someone out of something or into something just based on the information that you're providing. And that's a tough spot to be in, whether you're a doctor or a nurse or, you know, one of us, an intake coordinator trying to go through the paperwork required by Medicare and Medicaid. When you introduce that topic, people sometimes get, a little concerned about, making a decision that is life-changing.
Right. So we want to start with the basis that the Pulsed is putting you in control. You are making these decisions, and the Pulse, this one-page document, is your instruction set for anybody who comes upon you and you are in life-threatening distress. So if you make these decisions, and you have absolute control over the decisions you make. In fact, in it, one of the decisions you can make is, I'm not ready to make that decision at this time. Okay? I leave that in the hands of somebody else. And we want to go through this a little bit, but we really want to talk about the foundation of this and so that you have an understanding of it. It is a powerful document. In truth, we would recommend that on your list of required documents or the ones you really want to have, a Pulsed is a good thing because it gives you the power to manage it. So we'll go into that a little bit.
We'll start out by talking about, the Pulsed itself, so you know what we're talking about or what you're looking at. It's a blue form. Why is it blue?
Oh, so that it stands out. Emergency personnel will immediately recognize it. And they'll refer to it, and they'll have access to it. If you were in a hospital and your Pulsed was on the wall, it'd be easy for everyone to spot it and refer to it. Number two, the reason is that it screams, there is a Pulsed. That means that everybody can look for it in that few short microseconds of time at the beginning of an emergency. There's no time to start sorting through papers and categorizing them by title and doing all that.
So we're looking for a loved one to say, do you know what his wishes are?
That's right.
No time for that.
So that Pulse is blue, so it makes it stand out there. And that Pulse should be in an obvious place and in the same place. And if you have a Pulse in your home, the place to have that would be on your refrigerator. That's going to be where people find it. It's, it's a magnet or tape to it. That's the easy place. That's where all the notes are. So when emergency personnel come into your house, they will look at your refrigerator, see if there's a Pulse, and that will clue them in on that.
By the way, provider order life-sustaining treatment Pulsed. Underneath it says Utah Life with Dignity Order. That's an important statement because if you understand your choices, most of us do want life with dignity. So talk about that. Let's talk about what my choices are.
Well, let me cover that last one. And the last reason, again, that it's blue is so that it stands out in the paperwork that you're signing. It's not going to be just one of those documents that gets shuffled through. You should notice that this is a different document. And so that's the time for you to ask questions, really understand it. The reason that you are filling this form out in the presence of a healthcare worker, like a nurse or a doctor, is so that you have that opportunity to ask questions and get the information that is important to make an informed decision.
Right. So all that being said, it's probably a very good idea for everyone, no matter what your age is, to consider having a Pulsed completed so that your individual desires can be met in an emergency.
And it's something that you can change anytime you want. You just need to know that you have that option to change it. And so, again, from our position in hospice, we realize that change and choice are really the important tools for people.
There are three important parts to the Pulsed, part A, B, and C, that go directly to how you will be treated medically. And the fourth, D, covers whether you have given someone else the power and authority to make a medical decision for you if you are unable.
So A is CPR. Cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and since 1960, it has been the go-to standard of care in cases of a person's heart stopping. B, medical interventions. These are treatments when a patient has a pulse and is breathing. C, artificial nutrition. We can all imagine that topic. And D, the last one, is the advanced directive, and which is kind of an extension to the Pulsed. It's and we'll cover that in just a few minutes, but it's giving somebody else some authority to make some decisions for you. So before we go into detail on these topics, I want to cover a couple other things. This document, in order to be effective, has to be signed. It has to be signed by you. That would make sense. It's your post. But it also has to be signed by your doctor and whoever is providing you that information, because you want to have their input. You want to have the opportunity to ask them those questions.
It really is about having the opportunity to ask the questions and to be well informed. So again, information is power. Knowledge is power, and you should be well informed. You should ask questions, and you should be comfortable with the decisions you're making.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah,
absolutely.
How early would you recommend someone have a pulse, though? I mean, I'm 54 years old. Should I have one?
I don't see a downside to you having one. Let me say that there's a lot to this. I don't see a downside to you going through the process of considering these things in your life and decide whether it's something that you want to take into account.
It certainly starts a conversation with your family and loved ones, and that's mm-hmm. important, because sometimes family is really surprised by your position. On both extremes, I had one patient who literally, I mean, he has 16 active critical cases concerning, you know, his lung disease, his heart disease, he's got kidney failure and liver failure, and he says to his wife, I want everything. If I'm brain dead, put me on a machine and keep me alive and artificial nutrition. And his wife sat there and was like, that's surprising to hear.
Yeah.
It's surprising to hear, but it's good that they had that conversation.
Right.
It's good that everybody knows. And that's really what this document is letting people know what your true wishes are. And whatever your decision, we want you to understand that we support you. And in fact, this document makes sure that everybody supports you in your decision, because they know what it is and they'll do that. If emergency personnel show up in your house because somebody called, said that you're on the floor and not breathing, and they show up and they see a pulse and they read it and they say, everything that you can possibly do, I want done, then they're going to do everything they can possibly do.
And then if you're one of those people, and I'm one of those people, if my brain is not functioning, if I can't get up and communicate and open my eyes and know that you're there, let me go. And you get to discuss what's right for you. It's an opportunity to start the discussion and to share with your family what you want. We mentioned just briefly, and we can expand on it, the advanced directive and patient preferences. Let me say, if the pulsed is not done, if the advanced is not done, then typically the full extreme measures will be had. If you had a pulse on your refrigerator, let's say, and the emergency personnel came in and your wife or your family member is there, they can, you know, intervene and say, continue to resuscitate. I want you to resuscitate. Because the truth is, if in a critical emergency, if they don't mention, or if the EMRs don't run to the refrigerator to look for the pulse, they're going to follow the direction of the caregiver there. So it's not scary. It's not final. It's informative. It's information. And you should know. You should know. One of the things that I thought was profoundly interesting was really how aggressive CPR is in real life, because we see it in the movies, and it's just this little, you know, pushing on your chest, and it's, you know, very relaxed and calm, and 1, 2, 3, 4 as they count, and they might say faster, faster.
But CPR is not that. It is a violent act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who, if you take a 30-year-old person who has a fairly high recovery rate from CPR, they're going to break some ribs doing that. It's,
well, they've got to pump your heart, and your heart is sitting behind your ribs. So it's a lot of force. It can be a lot of force.
Right. They call it heart massage. So if you can imagine that, you've got to move that heart quite a bit. And so for somebody who has, you know, strong, pliable bones, and they're breaking them, and I don't know if you've ever broken a rib, Andy?
Not a rib, no.
Okay, well, I have broken a hairline fracture. I slipped on the stairs, and a few months after that, I finally got to the point where I wasn't afraid to breathe.
A deep breath.
But if you take that same thing and you multiply it multiple times, and then you apply that to maybe some frail, brittle bones for an elderly person, and their recovery rate is so much slower, you can, some of you may be able to imagine the pain that is going on. And I don't want to paint too graphic a picture here, but let's talk about on the CPR side, let's talk about some statistics so that we have an understanding. As we age, we have a less likely recovery from CPR, okay? Significantly less. We're talking about 10 to 15% recovery for somebody as they get older, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90 years old. They did a study of studies. They brought all the information that was available together, and they came up with some pretty shocking information. So the chance of survival, and this is all in a hospital situation, okay? So you're in a hospital and CPR is administered. The chance of survival to a hospital discharge for in-hospice CPR in older people is low, moderate to 11.6 to 18.7%, and it decreases with age. So you may be able to resuscitate somebody, but then they may not, in most cases, are not going to make it out of the hospital before they pass away. And what does that mean for somebody who has brittle bones and is in severe agony for another week before they pass away? I mean, those are the questions that we would like people to be informed about. And I have this study available. Give us a call. We'll give it to you. We think it's great to be well-informed. Certainly talk to your doctor, get his opinion, ask some hard questions. Because as Kaylee pointed out earlier, when somebody is talking to you about a pulse, they don't want to sound like they're influencing you one way or another. And sometimes
so they probably won't give you all the information unless you ask.
Right, because if they just keep piling on information after information, they're going to seem like they're trying to change your mind. So you need to take control of that and get that information. So with those numbers, you have to decide whether CPR, and that's just one part of the pulse, CPR, that's the first item. Do we want to do CPR or do we not? Or the last option, and there's three of them, and I'll just read these to you. Under cardiopulmonary resuscitation, attempt to resuscitate, selecting this then requires that you also look for full treatment under the medical intervention, which is the next section. Do not resuscitate or continue any resuscitation. Or the last one, I do not wish to express a preference. Selecting this may lead to attempts to resuscitate. This can work in concert with your advanced directive. If there is somebody else that should be making that decision, maybe they're in a better position to say, yes, please perform CPR because I saw him go down. I know it's only been X amount of time, and he was breathing up until just, this time, and maybe it's a good idea to give it a try.
But again, because there are multiple parts to this pulse, you can say, okay, try CPR, but if that doesn't work well and I'm, not in a good state, then just give me comfort measures thereafter or limited additional interventions or full treatments. So you do have, it's multiple parts to the one document. So you can have exactly your desires followed.
So the study that I'm referring to is the chance of survival and the functional outcome after in-hospital cardiopulmonary resuscitation in older people, a systematic review. So they took all of the studies that were out there and combined them and sorted through and found the best information available. And this is the background question. Physicians are frequently confronted with the question whether cardiopulmonary resuscitation is a medically appropriate treatment for older people. For physicians, patients, and relatives, it is important to know the chance of survival and the functional outcome after CPR in order to make an informed decision. There's a point in here, they say, after provision of expected survival rates, half of the patients who initially said they wanted to be resuscitated changed their minds. That means that you may today say, well, I want to be resuscitated, but if you have all the factual information, what they found is that half of the people that got that information said, no, I don't think I want to go through that. And so it's just important to know all the information so you can decide for yourself. Again, if you decide that full resuscitation is what you want, then you should have a pulse to make sure that everybody follows your recommendation or your desires. So that's going to be the important part.
I'd encourage everyone to read this study while considering your decisions regarding CPR. Please call our office at 435-477-6999. We'll be happy to send you a copy. Key points and takeaway here is more than half of the patients who initially survived resuscitation died in the hospital before their hospital discharge. The chance of survival to hospital discharge for in-hospital CPR in older people is low to moderate and decreases with age. Now, let me just say, segue into this. I did not want to talk about this topic. But as I've said before, we usually bring things up in our weekly meeting or radio show program based on the conversations that we've had recently. And recently we've had a lot of questions regarding this pulse. So you can have one at any time. Call our office again, 435-477-6999. We can provide you a pulse just to look at, just so that you have the information and a Utah advanced directive if that's what you're looking for. Before we close, I want to say something, you know, fun and interesting facts.
Yeah, so let's lighten this up a little bit. This has been kind of a tough conversation to have, and we hope that we've given some people some cause to think and prepare. But let's switch to some more fun facts.
Okay, so aging is not always a bad thing. Sometimes we save the best for last, right? So Isaac Newton, who is better known for his scientific achievements, became a scourge to counterfeiters as the warden of the Royal Mint, a position he held until his death in his
mid-80s.
Yeah.
He was working until his mid-80s, working for the government, but making sure that it was tough for counterfeiters to copy the coin.
Again, I'm pointing out how some really remarkable things happened very late ages for many people, because it's just kind of fun to realize that aging's not a bad thing. Being a senior can be a great and prosperous time. So Benjamin Franklin retired from public service when he was 82.
And Susan B. Anthony was past 80 when she formed the International Women Suffrage Alliance. And another one, Alexander Graham Bell was 75 when he received a patent for his work on the hydrofoil boat.
Here's one for you, Andy. Ready?
Yeah.
The founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken, Harlan David Sanders. No, yeah. Best known as Colonel Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
How old was he when he started Kentucky Fried Chicken?
I don't know.
65.
Very, very nice.
Eligible for Medicare.
If he were alive today, would he still say finger looking good, given our COVID circumstances?
I think he would, just under a mask. And then he'd sanitize.
So, this program was brought to you by Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. Our phone number, 435-477-6999.
Please call us with any questions or concerns or topics that you would like us to discuss on the air. Remember, if we've ever touched on a subject that you wanted to know more about, that you thought was important to your specific circumstances, please call our office, 435-477-6999. We'd love to hear from you.
And the listeners on this radio program are becoming the go-to resources for their friends and neighbors. You will have more information so that you can help people understand better. We encourage you to do some research, and we will give you all the resources to do that so that you can be well prepared.
And pay attention to your neighbors, because we have had a tremendous response from neighbors who are concerned about their neighbors. And give us a call and say, ask questions or ask if they can give their neighbors our numbers. And please do.
Yeah. And if you know somebody who needs help in any way, give us a call and we'll try and find that help, or we will offer that help ourselves. So we appreciate everybody listening to this radio program. Again, our telephone number, 435-477-6999.
Have a great week, everybody.
Good.